You might want to start over.
Okay.
We'll try this again.
Foster care is a useful and helpful service for many people, and it has quite literally saved lives. However, we can all wholly agree that the system is beyond flawed. I recently read an article on a young girl that was sexually assaulted by a foster parent. The father of the young girl lived out of state and had requested that his daughter be moved to live with him. He allegedly called the caseworker more than 130 times. The caseworker had known about the abuse for months, yet did nothing. When asked to comment on this, Office of Children's Services Director Christy Lawton's excuse was the caseworker's load was too high. The average load of caseworkers in other parts of the country is around 12 cases, but Alaska skyrockets to over 40 cases at times. Though this is unfortunate, it isn't an excuse. When the livelihood of our children is at stake, there is simply no room for neglect by the state. As a previous foster child in Alaska, I can attest to the negligence of Alaska's foster care system. My siblings and I were put into foster care in February of 2015. Our parents aren't bad people, save for the fact that they do struggle with alcohol issues. We were placed in a foster home with people that were rumored to do meth, smoke marijuana, had a cocoa plant growing in their home. It was fine for a few months, but the foster parent slowly started to become manipulative and was mentally abusive. She would constantly put my biological family down and use emotions to get what she wanted. Eventually, they allowed their biological family to move into the home with my younger sister and I still living there. I hadn't known that they had to let OCS know about this, so I just assumed that I had to be okay with it. Both people that had moved in were currently abusing meth or recovering from it. It made me highly uncomfortable, and I felt unsafe a lot of the time. I called my caseworker nearly every day and left voicemails detailing why I needed her to call me back, yet she never did. She was also required to come by and check on us at least once a month, and she frequently failed to do even that. I ran away from that foster home in November of 2015. I texted my foster mother and told her where I was going and proceeded to turn my cell phone off. I had returned home to my biological grandmother because I felt safe with her. She's raised me since I was three. The police showed up after a few days and they asked me why I was there. I told them everything about the foster home I was currently in and I stressed that I wanted my little sister removed. I told them that I would go with them as long as they took me anywhere other than back to that foster home. They told me to stay put with my grandmother, and I joyfully thought that they would just let me live with her. However, I was wrong. Around an hour later, a caseworker from OCS came to our home and forcibly removed me. I was placed in a temporary foster home, though I thought it would be my new home at the time. I was extremely scared and traumatized, and I called my grandma every few hours for reassurance. A few days later, at 9 o'clock p.m., my caseworker told me that I was being sent to Ketchikan, Alaska for treatment. I was told not to run away. She told me that it would only be for a week, and she would come get me after that week was up. I hesitantly agreed and left the next morning at 5 o'clock a.m. I was extremely scared, and I didn't realize why I was being punished for removing myself from a harmful situation. I arrived in Ketchikan with only a week's worth of clothing, and I was left there for 7 months. It was still the most traumatizing thing I've ever been through in my life, and I don't even want to talk about all the things that happened while I was there. Nonetheless, I told myself to stay strong. I worked my way up through the ranks and was able to leave inpatient treatment and was chosen to live with the director of the program as a foster child. I had to fight with my caseworker for my right to go home to the Valley. I was eventually flown back home, and I was placed with another foster parent. She seemed like a dream come true compared to the other foster parents I had lived with, but that was also short-lived. I feel like she tried her best to care, but she wasn't used to taking care of children with trauma. I was unable to leave my room for a lot of the time due to depression, and one time she took away my cell phone for a week or so. I had no outside contact, and I attempted suicide. I also had an IUD at the time, which was causing significant health issues, and I had told her about it multiple times. I didn't get to the hospital for months. My caseworker eventually showed up and dragged me to the emergency room, only for them to tell me that they couldn't do anything. They referred me to Planned Parenthood instead. The foster parent refused to let me come back to her home, but I was happy because that's what I had wanted for months and months. She had also taken my paychecks and cashed them without my knowledge, taking around $200 for herself. She said it was for my expenses, like car rides to and from places. I never got my money back. After that foster home, I was placed with wonderful and caring people. They were older, and they had already raised many children of their own. They were well-equipped to deal with trauma, and I believe that I did the best I had ever done with them. I still have them on my Facebook friends list, and I'll never, ever forget their kindness. Unfortunately, I was removed from the home due to a conflict with a teenage boy that also lived there. It was refreshing to be around people that cared about me for once. The problem with that is it took multiple homes to find one person that was good. So much trauma could have been avoided, and I would have been a completely different person than I am today. I could have been better, and I could have been healthier. I'm working on my issues now that I'm an adult going to college and living on my own, but it could have been avoided. I was returned to live at home with my grandmother after I turned 18. She finally got me back after 2 entire years. If that had been the solution in the first place, none of this would have happened. I understand that the Office of Children's Services is very busy and each caseworker has a high caseload, but something needs to change. Something needs to be done because if the children going into foster care are coming out worse than when they came in, something is wrong. And another thing that had happened that I failed to include was when I went to treatment, I had left a little pink DS. And I got it back finally after I had gotten back from treatment, and I found a whole bunch of my caseworkers' pictures on there, and they weren't good. A lot of stuff could have been avoided.
And if you had one piece of advice that you'd want to give that you feel that would have the biggest change, what would that be to what happened to you?
Biggest change. If they had given my parents the proper resources to get better before they took us out of the home, none of this would have happened. So I think we should push for different alternatives to putting kids into foster homes.
Perfect. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Come on to the table. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thanks. Ready?
Yep.
So my name is Amanda Mativier, and I'm representing Facing Foster Care in Alaska. I'm an alumni of the foster care system as well. I spent 3 years in foster care here in Anchorage, and I started the foster care advocacy organization, Facing Foster Care in Alaska, about 15 years ago now. And so over the last 15 years, I've worked with thousands of youth in our foster care system. I've been on national committees, state committees, and really helped to push a lot of reform efforts that have come directly from young people in the system. So unfortunately, I've heard a lot of stories like Rebecca's. And so today I wanted to just go over some things that I would recommend as solutions. My husband and I have been foster parents for the last 10 years to teenagers here in Anchorage. So there's a bill currently moving through the legislature. It passed the House this last session unanimously. It was House Bill 151, and it does a number of things that would really help to safely reduce the number of children in foster care. So right now we have over 3,000 children in foster care in our state. It's a record high. We do removals in our state of children at a much higher rate than other states. The number one thing I think in this that's really important is that it would limit caseloads for caseworkers. And so the national standard, the national recommendation for caseloads is 12 cases per worker. So it's 12 families per worker, which really frees up a lot of time for caseworkers to be able to do home visits, to go to court, to plan and do case plans with birth parents within the first 60 days, to do relative search, to identify, you know, family members, family friends, you know, alternate options. So with 3,000 children and youth in foster care, I think we have just over 1,400 foster homes. So it's really hard to match up, right? You have a child that comes into foster care, caseworker's supposed to be doing relative search, building a case plan with parents, and then also finding an emergency placement that's going to be a good fit. Like Rebecca said, that's going to be able to meet a child's mental health needs, whether there's been trauma, things like that. It's going to be really hard to play matchmaker. So it really frees up a lot of time for caseworkers. If, you know, we say that the standard, I think the bill says 13, even though the national standard is 12, would, you know, bring that number down from caseworkers in the Mount Sioux Valley who are holding, you know, 43 cases is the average out there. It's over 30 in Anchorage. I know some guardian ad litems who carry a caseload of over 100, AGs who carry a caseload of over 60. So if people had more time to individually dedicate to families, they could, you know, do all the things that are laid out already in policy and practice and law that they don't have time to do, really, because they have to just respond to crisis. Some other things that the bill outlines are a supervisor certifying that a relative search happened within 30 days. So a lot of times, you know, workers get caught up, they get really busy, you know, they're out doing home visits, they don't have time. If they have to do a home visit for every child on their caseload, and their caseload is 43, that could be 150 children, all in different foster homes. I mean, they don't have time for court or anything else, relative search. It also tries to expedite the application process for relatives who do want to become licensed foster care placements. So it puts a time limit, so there's actually going to be a response, you know, from the department within a certain time period, within 45 days. So right now, a relative could come forward and say, hey, yeah, I'll take placement, and they don't have the means to care for that child, so maybe becoming licensed would be the best option for them to receive, you know, a stipend, support to buy food, things like that. But there's no time limit. There's no time frame that says the department has to respond to you within 30, 40, 50 days. So you have these family members out here who are lingering who could be a good option if, you know, parents need more time to get better. I think finally, because I won't take up too much time, I know there's other people waiting to testify. I mean, I think ultimately this bill would really promote safe reduction. Like if we're investing in our workforce, training, it increases training for child welfare staff from 3 weeks to 5 weeks. There's a gold standard training out of New Jersey, and I think they do 6 weeks there, but it's really better preparing workers. Because they come in on the front end, they're fresh, maybe out of college, maybe have never worked with families. So it allows them to come in, get training, go out in the field and come back for more training to, you know, do some continuing ed and really learn how to engage with families. So I think that's it. I appreciate you taking the time to open this up to the public and to current and former foster youth to come and share. And I just really appreciate you shedding light on this issue as well.
Well, and I appreciate you being here. And so you said you were in the system for 3 years. And so within the system, what you saw, you know, and I know the caseworkers come in and visit as part of it. Are there anything else that you could think of that you would ask for improvements just on the foster care side itself?
In my own experience in the system, I did have multiple caseworkers, but I think in a lot of ways my case was kind of a happy case. There was efforts to connect me to family members who I wasn't connected to for years, my father and other people who I now have really great relationships with as an adult, and, you know, it's great to have my parents around to be grandparents to my children. And I think there were a lot of efforts to really connect my foster family to my own biological family. And so for me, I have, you know, sort of two families in a way, but everyone's connected and gets along really well. And so these efforts for, you know, my foster parents to be connected to my bio parents and all the adults got along, and that was really healthy for me to see and be a part of, and to be able to have a relationship with my parents, to watch them get healthy and get better, and to be able to, you know, reconnect with them as an adult.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
And is there anybody else in the room who would like to testify right now? Okay. Yep, come on up. Just give your name. You can just begin. Hi, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
Yep, you might want to talk up just a little bit.
Okay. I first want to say thank you so much for doing this, and I'm going to need tissue. Thank you for the work that you're doing for families. It really, really touches me that you're doing this. And I can't tell you how grateful I am. So my name is Megan Lockard, and I'm here as a former foster child. And then I'm also the biological mother of 6 children that have been in foster care. So I've been on both sides of the coin. I couldn't hear what the other ladies were saying because I'm hearing impaired, and so I don't know what their experiences were, but I can tell you my experience. My experience has been that OCS has been one of the worst agencies in my life, probably the worst agency that I've ever had to deal with. As a child, I was exposed to horrific abuse, various kinds of abuse, numerous perpetrators. We had a lot of investigations. I was headstrong even as a kid. So there was at one point in time where I found my brother covered in bruises, and I took him to the OCS office in Nome, Alaska. And the staff there wouldn't do anything. What I know today is that the agency that should have saved me did not, until my mother tried to kill me in public. And it was only after her trying to kill me with a knife in public and I had multiple broken bones that OCS finally intervened. And I was placed in emergency foster care long enough to be sent to relatives that did not want me and could not afford me, where they dumped me off into Job Corps and I became a very heavy drug user. I wish I could say my story got better from there, but it didn't. What I know today is that because of the trauma that I went through, I didn't know how to deal with it, and I didn't have a family. I didn't have a support system. So I perpetuated a lot of those things that I was exposed to as a child. I drank heavily. I used drugs heavily. I became a mom at 18, and I had no idea what I was doing as a parent, and I didn't have any support. And I wasn't a perfect parent. I've made mistakes. 6.5 years ago, I got clean and sober.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I worked really hard to do that. And I worked really hard to turn my life around and to be the best mom that I can. I always wanted to be a good mom. I just never knew how. And when I would go to places and tell them I need help, they wouldn't know how to help me. You know, I went to lots of therapists and lots of doctors, and nobody knew how to help me. And I wanted help. I really, really wanted help. I wanted to get better. I wanted to be a good parent. I didn't know what I was doing, and I'd ask for help. And nobody knew how to help me. They would just, you know, pass me off onto the next person. So I spent the first 11 years of my parenthood being a less than stellar parent, but I'm trying to make up for it now. The reason that I'm here today, and I don't know if it's appropriate for this this session that you're having, but it's really important for me to share this. And it relates to, hopefully, what you're talking about today. Last year, one of my children disclosed that they were being sexually abused. And I immediately took action on that. I called a medical professional, and they tried to guide me through what to do. I ultimately had to take all of my 6 children to Alaska Cares. And I wish that I could say I had a good experience there. I did not. The OCS worker that I had was combative. They were argumentative. They were not helpful. They were accusatory. And ultimately, at the end of the day, they were completely unwilling to even notify the perpetrator that they had a substantiated claim of sexual abuse of a minor. And what they told me is that they would be working with my family in, like in an off-the-books capacity. And so, I did all the things that was suggested. I worked with the police department. I got my children and I into a safe place. I filed for protective orders. At the long-term protective order hearing, I made the judge aware of what was going on. And the judge said that I was disparaging the perpetrator's good name. Even being aware that sexual abuse of a minor was what was being investigated. So for the 5 of my children, the long-term protective orders were denied. And at one point, OCS finally approved visitation with my children for the perpetrator. Approximately 2 to 3 months later, well, during the subsequent 2 to 3 months, I was trying to get a hold of the worker that I was working with, again, in the off-the-books capacity. She never returned any of my emails. She never returned any of my calls. I was working with a parenting professional. Because what I know today is that I have to insulate my life from OCS. That is exactly the terminology I use. I have to insulate myself. So I have no friends, I have no family, I have no nothing, but I have to insulate my life with professionals that can testify absolutely Megan is doing the very best she can every single day to be a good parent. And so I had one of those professionals intervening. And even with that professional, their phone calls and their emails were not being returned. So at the end of that, I agreed to let this person have contact with my children. Once OCS discovered, they came and took custody of my six children. Even though they had approved the visitation, even though the judge denied the protective order, even though I tried calling them multiple times to clarify what that meant, and they would never call me back, they would never email me back, they took custody. Along with them taking custody of my children, they substantiated 12 claims of abuse and neglect against me, 6 claims for sexual abuse of a minor, and 6 claims of neglect. And for the perpetrator that harmed my child, he got 1 claim. 1. So now what my experience has been that I've had to fight OCS, when I got the document stating that there was a substantiation letter, they had waited 3 weeks to mail it after they had dated it. So I had 1 week to file an appeal. I should have 30 days. I did not. I filed the appeal, and what I know now is that if you have a substantiated claim against you and you appeal that with the state, you do not get a court-appointed attorney. You either have to apply for one or you have to represent yourself. I was not able to find a lawyer that would represent me because I'm low income and I'm a divorced mother. So I'm representing myself in that appeals case with the Office of Administrative Hearings. On my own merits, I've been able to get 7 of those substantiated claims overturned. Again, because I have to live in fear of a government program that I know if I do not insulate my life from them, they have absolute authority and no accountability. Now, when I went through my China case, I had numerous documents from people saying letters of recommendation. I had at least a dozen. My pediatrician, children's therapists, the whole gamut, right? Because I don't have friends. I have professionals. Because my word means nothing, but my pediatrician's word has its weight in gold. So it doesn't matter what I say, but it matters what they say. So after going through and meeting with all of the staff, we did our first case conference, and I said, how are these 12 substantiated claims going to impact my employment? They assured me it would not. What I can tell you today is that I was lied to. I was deceived by the Attorney General's office. I was deceived by the Guardian Ad Litem's office. And then what I subsequently found out later when I filed a complaint with the Ombudsman's office is that, no, the players in the game don't know the rules. So the attorneys that were party to my case did not know the effects of a substantiated claim on a parent, because a substantiated claim of abuse or neglect absolutely impacts your ability to gain employment or to maintain employment, depending on your line of work. Why didn't they know that? I don't know. Is it my job as a parent to educate them? Absolutely not. When I asked the Ombudsman's office why nothing has been done about that, they said they've made recommendations to OCS, but OCS has refused to adopt those recommendations because they've received that same complaint before. Why? I don't have an answer for that. We went through my China case, and at the end of the China case, another child made disclosures, and I walked that child through the Alaska Cares process also. I can't say enough how disappointed I am in OCS and how they handled my children's mental health. They placed my daughter in a mental health program that was not appropriate for her, first at North Star Hospital, where she was assaulted and was not removed from the vicinity of where that child was. And then she was placed in a residential program that could not treat her needs. And she left. And now that my OCS case is closed, I'm stuck trying to deal with that on my own. I'm not a mental health professional. I've gone through the process, and I did not stipulate to adjudication. I'm sure you know what that means.
Yeah.
And my case was closed before trial. So I feel pretty victorious that my case was dismissed and that so far I have those 7 substantiated claims overturned. I really need your help, and others like me really need your help. I understand that there are people out there that harm children. I get that, and I lived with them. And someone should have done something to help me. But when OCS intervenes with families in an inappropriate way, they cause just as much destruction to the family unit as a perpetrator does. I wish I could have my children here, but I didn't know if it would be appropriate, and I didn't want my 4-year-old to be disruptive or disrespectful. You know, there are so many things wrong with the system, and I just wanted to bring that to you so that we can highlight, you know, there are things going on within the system that, you know, our own players don't even know what's going on. Another good point. Because of the law that was changed October 24th with our legislature now, any family that has an open case during the PFD filing period, their PFDs are automatically taken. Whether or not the case went to adjudication, whether or not the case went to trial, whether or not the case was dismissed and the children went back to their families, I've had to petition the court to get my children's PFDs released back to me, even though my children are with me. Why are we making more work for families? I don't understand that. We're creating a redundant system. There was nothing wrong with the old system. And we all talk about how tight money is. I don't understand that.
Well, you will get my apology for that one. I missed it, and several of us did. I think the intentions behind it was good. There were times when parents got children back temporarily, took the money, utilized it for other things. The unintended consequences, exactly what you just said. Mm-hmm. Parents who got their children back and then had to go back to court to release what was theirs. Those who are listening understand that the money is put into the children's names. They're not given to the adoptive parents or not even to the biological parents at the time. And you have to go back in again then explain why you need it. And that will be revisited. It got, sadly, that's it. It is my fault. I try to read everything that comes from my desk and how I miss that. And unfortunately, I caught it when I had a family who got their children back and did not realize that did not just automatically come back to them, and they had to go through the extra steps of that. So you do have my sincere apology and my promise to have that revisited. Maybe the language needs tightened up so that it's more targeted to what it was for. And I do know there was good reason why it was brought forward, but it definitely has had unintended consequences. So thank you so much for bringing that and for telling your story. And I am so proud of what you've done. And please never forget that and never let them win. I will make sure you have my number before you leave here. And if there are services that you need, we will help you get those.
Thank you so much.
You're very lucky.
Thank you for listening and letting me share my story.
That's all. Thank
you. If there's anything I can do to help you, please let me know. I'm an active person, and I won't go down without a fight. And this is one of those things where I feel really passionately that we need to change it so that we're benefiting everyone in the most appropriate way.
Thank you. And that is our intent for this, is to get the stories out. But that's not enough. It really is about what can we do to make the changes so that everybody benefits from it. Thank you very much. Okay, and we're going to go to Ann. Ann, are you online? Oh, sorry, I got the person running around. Sorry. Okay, Ann, you should be able to talk now.
Okay. I wanted to tell about, you know, our 2 kids being taken from OCS and how it affected me, Lena, if that's okay.
That's fine. Go right ahead.
Her brother and sister were taken in 2014 due to an accident when I was cooking dinner, and our son was crawled into the kitchen, and I accidentally tripped over him, and some of the hot water splashed onto him, and we took him to the emergency room, and 4 nurses and a ER doctor checked him out, and he only had 1 degree, and second-degree burns. And they released us from the hospital. And then a week later, OCS showed up at our door and lied to get into our apartment when our kids were taking a nap and myself was taking a nap because we had a tummy virus. As soon as the caseworker got into our apartment and saw my son, our son, they took custody of our kids, our two younger kids. And Melina hasn't seen her brother and sister for almost 3 years. And it's been really hard on her because she loves her brother and sister so much. And the foster parents refuse to let Melina see her brother and sister because that's not their problem. That's our problem because of what happened. And we can't fix it. And Melina is suffering as well as, you know, my wife and myself. We've done everything and more than what OCS has asked us to do. And it's not good enough, and it will never be good enough. And I don't know what else to do, and neither does my wife. And that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Anne. I appreciate it. And in the room, it looks like we have Emily.
Yes.
You're absent. Not a problem. We'll definitely come back to you. Carly Kelly? Carly, are you there? Okay, try again. Maybe you were still muted.
Yeah, sorry. I had you guys muted.
No, you're fine. We can hear you. Go right ahead.
I don't know. I've been dealing with OCS for about 3 years now, and my case from the very beginning hasn't been fun, helpful, anything. You know, I agree with a lot of, mostly all the other statements that, you know, the system is necessary. Kids do need help. But in the same sense, they're supposed to be keeping families as much together as possible. They're supposed to be working with families to make sure the kids don't, if it's not necessary, they shouldn't be taken from that family. And if they are taken, they should be actively helping fix the problem so that way those children can go back to that family. Because it is a very true statement that being in the OCS system, having OCS involved, is just as traumatic on a child as anything else. This whole scenario sucks. I've done everything they asked me to do. Then they asked me, because of allegations that were from a different person that isn't, it's a toxic person that is involved in my life, but only for the sole fact that she's my mother-in-law. And she said that I was doing heroin, for instance. So they go, they want me to do drug classes now. The most I've ever done is weed, and now they want me to do a level one drug program, which is the same as someone who has done meth and heroin. And I've never done any, like, I've been doing my UAs and nothing, no drugs pop up, and yet it's just another thing added on to my case plan. When I completed my case plan, now they have this concern. My children, I haven't seen them in almost 4 months. I've been begging for visits, begging for visits. Again, they canceled my visit on an allegation, didn't even follow through, didn't go and check out the scenario, didn't even contact my counselor, who they said they wanted to go through her on all directions that they want to go. They want to see how my progress is, things like that. Well, when my counselor has told them that she doesn't find a reason or find it necessary for my children to not be in my custody, they started not contacting her. They started not listening to her. So when it came to the incident that they referred to as why they canceled my visit, it's not even an accurate situation. And the situation that did actually happen, my counselor doesn't feel is a reason for my kids to let alone stop my visits, but not be home. I feel as a parent that I'm being robbed of being a parent. I feel like instead of blaming everybody and blaming the parents for, you know, well, we have so many cases, we have, you know, not enough caseworkers. Well, if they didn't take families or rip families apart and take children when it wasn't necessary, and they actually made the initiative and made the effort to fix the problems instead of just automatically assuming that everybody is unfixable, then there wouldn't be that many cases open. There wouldn't be that many children in foster care. They wouldn't have an excuse to not do their job. And I just, sorry, hold on just a second. I just feel that, especially for my children, I just feel that as a parent, we don't get enough support. And when we do complete the things that we're supposed to complete and do the things that we're asked to do, we don't get the credit for it. It doesn't matter if we're following what we're supposed to do. It doesn't matter if we're cooperating or, you know, if we make wrongs, of course we should fix them. But if we do fix them, then why can't we have our kids? And for the kids, I mean, my oldest son, while he was in state's custody, got touched inappropriately. And I told OCS, as I had my caseworker sit there and tell me that she was going to send my two oldest children back to this foster home, I told her in a TDM that I was not going to allow that to happen. And she said, Ms. Kelly, you don't have any say. And I said, yes, I do, because as much as you guys have physical custody of my children, I am a parent and I have rights. She didn't like that, but yet everybody else thankfully agreed and the kids didn't go back there. Sorry.
You're fine.
Now, I finally, after 3 months, finally got it approved to FaceTime and call my children while they're still working out my visit. And instead of working with the parent, I have to sit here and go around the foster parent schedule. When they take on the responsibility as a foster parent, they're supposed to be working with the system. They're supposed to be working to accommodate the families. You know, if the goal is to literally care about what is best for the children, then basically what I'm trying to say is foster parents nowadays feel like, at least I feel, that they get too personally invested too quick. They get told by OCS, and I know for a fact that all of this, I have four kids, all the sets of foster parents have been told that it's going to be adoption, that they're going to get to keep them. So they built this bond instead of sitting there and basically now that I'm able to FaceTime and call, these foster parents are now telling me that I have to accommodate their schedule. Well, what about my schedule? You know, they have schedules that stay the same pretty much except for little details here or there. I work at a restaurant. I sit here and I have schedules that change every week. And as a mother, I'm supposed to be accommodated. I'm supposed to have rights. But yet, our grandparents, you know, for instance, the toxic one that I brought up earlier, she gets visits with my son. She is abusing her pain medication, abusing her muscle relaxers. She actively drinks. She's a very toxic person, been in and out of API, and she gets to visit my child, and I don't. They say that they care so much about the well-being of children, what's best for the children, but if they did, they wouldn't be ripping them so quick out of people's hands. You know, I've been told by this toxic family member that I make babies for the state to take. I don't know what type of person you have to be to say that to somebody, but I don't know anybody who would make a child just to give to the state. This is the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with in my life. All in the same year, my kids were taken, my mom passed away. There's a lot of things that have happened in my life. I've done wrong, I've made mistakes, but it doesn't mean I'm a bad mom. kids are sitting there begging me in the visits that I did have to bring them home, and I can't. That's got to be the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with. The disappointment on my 4, 3, 2, and 1-year-old faces when I can't be the mom that I want to be because I'm not given the opportunity. When I ask why I, you know, when I've completed everything they asked me to do up until the now recent classes that they want me to do, which, mind you, I'm going to be doing because I'm going to do everything to fight for my children. Even if they think I'm going to give up, I'm not. But the thing is that when you do everything you're supposed to do, you're supposed to get a child home visit. You're supposed to get an effort from the state of Alaska to try to reunify. What happens for the parents who do that, who work with the state, who cooperate, who, even though they very much dislike their caseworker and they very much feel that their caseworker is personally invested in their life at this point, what happens when those families don't even get the opportunity to do a trial home visit, where the state's just automatically writing off that they want an adoption? They're trying to adopt out my kids, sweep under the rug, but they've lied and manipulated and treated my family very poorly, and they're trying to just sweep it under the rug, adopt them out without even trying a trial home visit, without even trying unsupervised visits, without even making any sort of progress or effort. And then when I asked one of the higher-up people there, his name is Tim Bowles, when I asked him why I can't try a trial home visit, they said, why are we going to try something that's just going to fail? What gives him that God complex? What makes it okay for him to just assume that it's going to fail? I think the system is very corrupt. I think the system is very one-sided and very entitled. Instead of looking out for the best interest of our children, they're looking out for the best interest of the state and what is in the best interest of OCS. And it's not fair. I think in order to make the system better, they need to make it a more, you know, for the emergency cases, if someone's getting beat, if someone's getting, you know, molested or something like that, yes, intervene, please do. You know, save all the kids you can. But for the kids that are just being legally kidnapped, this is not okay. And I feel like there needs to be more of an effort on OCS's side and not all the responsibility taken by the parents.
Hello. I'm coming from a slightly different angle. My husband and I are foster parents, and I agree with so many of the sentiments that I've already heard within the room. We are involved at the moment in a case that's been ongoing for just shy of 3 years. You and I have spoken before. We have 2 of 4 children in our home. The youngest of the 2 children, or the youngest of the 4 children in our home. And I can't even begin to tell you how many times we have watched OCS fail, and fail more. In the almost 2 full years in our home, we've had, 5 home visits. You know, we're supposed to have one every month. The ones that we have had are with the current social worker, and it's because I have to ask her every month if she'll come. A home visit with said social worker is average of 5 to 7 minutes. That's not fair to these kids, because that social worker then is supposed to be representing what's in their best interest. But when you have no idea what goes on in their lives, how can you represent them? I am not coming at this from a adoptive perspective for the other families within the room, of which they've said. So I know that that is a problem at some time. I know that that can be. But what we are watching is the biological parents in this situation are having continued reports of harm from their supervised visit times. There are therapists on record saying this should not be continuing. These are not coming from us. These are coming from documented professionals in the healthcare community of all 4 various children, and the social workers aren't listening. We have had the people supervising the visits refuse to ever do it again. They have been removed from places of which they've done visits around Anchorage because the family is so disruptive and it's such an unhealthy environment that it's dangerous to the children involved and it's dangerous to the families around them during their family visit time. Those are not words that came from my mouth or my husband. Those are from the people watching what's happening. We have been through so many social workers, so many guardian ad litems. We have been through multiple state attorney generals at this point. And today we just came from court. We had a surprise, another new judge. There's no one consistent on this case. The only thing consistent is that OCS can't tell you up or down or what's right or wrong because the social worker and the social worker supervisor, there's a direct conflict of interest of what's going on in this case, and no one will return calls. We have had to make a report of harm because of something that happened. It has then been repeated. The same report of harm had to be repeated outside of our home through the child care provider, another licensed mandated reporter. And her statement wasn't taken for what was said that happened by the child, made a report to his daycare provider. She called OCS, said, we're not taking this. I'm not saying names of which because it's not mine to say due to confidentiality, but we have begged for help. We have begged for someone to answer us. We have begged for responses, but now that we have made this report of harm, we are now being penalized because they're looking at removing them from our home, a home that they've been within for almost 2 years, a home that they have the baby. They have no idea. They're also refusing to tell the children, and they want no transition. So they want to take them from our home and immediately put them into a new home, but they will not allow for a transition. The biological mother doesn't want this. The biological dad is indifferent. I can't speak on his behalf, but the biological mom even said, what are we doing? Why are you doing this? No one will listen. My husband and I are not the reason these children are in care, but what we are those two that are in our home, their best advocate. We are not advocating for stay here, stay there, go there, but we have two children in our home, and we can't get the supposed state that's supposed to be taking care of them to listen to what's happening. We take them to the pediatrician, and then we have the pediatrician makes a report based on what happened, and the state goes, well, the pediatrician knows a lot about this family, but we're not going to take that right now. And then we'll make another report. The teachers made a report about behavior following family time because it's so catastrophic is the best way to describe what happens during those visits, that they get ended early on a regular basis because of the language that's used toward the children, because of physical harm that's used toward the children, because of how disruptive they are during those supervised times, that we then have children that come home that the 7-year-old can't function. She's in a puddle on the floor because no one's listening, because she's hurting and she's been fed horrible and touched horribly. And we can't get the state or anyone to listen. No one. All we are trying to do is advocate for them. There was a therapist who was advocating for her, and then it was brought up that she'd only been practicing for 4 years, and they had her removed from the case. So every time we get one person that wants to help these kiddos, no one listens. I had a conversation with our licensing worker. She asked for clarification because I called you last week. We are in trouble currently because I reached out to you. When the licensing worker asked us a question, I said, you would have to ask said social worker. And she said, well, you've not been given that? No, we've never been given anything. I have nothing. I had to beg for medical authorizations to be able to take the children in my home for almost 2 years now to be able to take them to the doctor because they didn't give me their folder. I didn't get any of the information from the state because they relied on the previous foster home to give us all of their information. So it's beyond frustrating to witness as trying to help, trying to give information, trying to support these kids. But every time these kids get someplace, OCS turns around and absolutely ignores what's happening. You can't get the social worker, you can't get the super, you can't get returns, but don't worry, if you make them have to do something, we're not going to listen. If you reach out to your state representatives, which that's what we're supposed to have a right to be able to do, we are being penalized because we reached out to you. I don't know what happened to the state in being Child Protective Services, but they are only servicing their own agenda. And that goes for us as foster parents, as the lack of resources, and I'm listening and appreciating the lack of resources that I've heard in this room, and I'm not negating it, but it's happening to both sides of these parties. It is just unbelievably frustrating to yell at a wall and it still doesn't hear you. No matter what words you use, it doesn't matter. If it's not on their agenda, it doesn't count.
Yeah, I did a lot of research in the past couple. Let me get a little closer here. I've done a lot of research in the last couple of weeks, and the same thing keeps producing itself in the sense that there is no requirement in the state of Alaska except taking an exam. Like a high school student can graduate college, go through a certification program, and be a social worker. I think it's a lot more than that. Our current social worker on our situation, she's at OCS, looked at herself. And like those are the people that we have in the state taking care of the kids that are in the system. I find that repulsive, that people who we are supposed to trust to give us information as foster parents and to give parents the information that they need in order to be better functioning citizens. I mean, I'm not saying that there's good parents and there's bad parents. I'm not trying to say that all parents are bad, because they're not. In our situation, yes, they are. The state will say, hey, do this. And then you do it, and then they turn around and say, no, not good enough. It's a double-edged sword. There's no fairness, whether it comes from the foster parent side or the biological parent side. Like we said, the kids that we have been in the system for 3 years, just shy of 3 years, and the federal mandate to terminate rights is 15 months. And the parents all of a sudden, oh, well, I'm now going to give you a compelling reason as to why I should get my kids back. But, you know, as foster parents, we signed a note indicating if there's a report of harm, we have to report it. And then they literally cut off our hands and our feet. And, you know, when there's legitimate reason that there should be a report of harm, they sweep it under the rug. Like, it's not as bad as it was.
We have literally been told that the abuse that we've witnessed is, yes, child abuse, but because it's a better type of child abuse than what they had them removed for, that we're going to celebrate that. And when you say it's still child abuse, there shouldn't be a sliding scale of high five because that was better than what you used to do. So it's not just the biological parents, and it's not just the foster parents. If it's not what OCS wants, it really doesn't matter what you do, because neither party has any fair representation without consequence. So, thank you.
And we've provided the resources to the current biological parents. We've provided them our emails and our phone numbers, and because that's what we were supposed to do, and they still haven't. I mean, they haven't reached out to us or anything, and then they're rolling over and saying that we're making their children inaccessible, which we're not. My biggest concern is the people that we have in place to run OCS, there should be better requirements for them to make proper decisions for the children, because the crap that's in there now are not, you know, I mean, there are good social workers in there, I know that for a fact, but there's also, you have the scum of the earth that they just roll over, and I don't care, sweep it under the rug, it's not as bad as it was, so.
Okay,
I can can hear you. My name is Rachel Laramie, and I came here today to first tell you about my experience as a foster child, and then briefly touch on my experience with child services here in the state of Alaska. At the age of 7 years old, I was a documented habitual runaway. To the best of my memory, I ran away probably every other month because I was going through abuse in my home. It took running away about every other month until I was 12 years old and had been sexually molested by my step-parent for the state of Florida to get involved. I then went into foster care with a relative for a few months. And after that situation didn't work out, child services in Florida lied to the state of Hawaii to have me transferred back to Florida to a foster home. I got off the airplane and I was abruptly returned to my parents, which was my foster father, or my stepfather rather, and my mom. That lasted for about 6 weeks before I was sent to a group home. I was living in southern Florida, so a bit of a culture shock took place. I was put into a shelter where there was 30 black girls and myself. And within me being there less than a month, I was jumped by about 80% of those girls. I then ran away from that placement because there was nobody in Children's Services who could help me. The system was too understaffed. There was too many children that needed placement. There weren't any beds available anywhere. I subsequently was raped and kidnapped. Then about 6 months later, put into another foster home where my life was threatened by another foster child that was not supposed to be in the house. It was a three-bedroom apartment where the foster parents had four children of their own that occupied one room. They had their room to themselves, and then I was in a room with another foster girl who had a newborn baby. And another girl that used to stay with those foster parents had run away to their home, and she threatened to throw boiling water on me in the middle of the night, so ran away from that placement. And there was just no good level whatsoever of care in the system. You know, you couldn't even have basic needs met. Go to the dentist, go to the doctor. So I finally went to court and I pleaded with the judge at the time to let me go back and live with my parents because we had made an agreement that I would get my GED and I would enlist into the military when I was 17, but I needed my mother's authorization or signature in order to do so. The court allowed me to do this. I went home, went to the military, and ended up technically being in state custody until I turned 18 years old. I became a mother about a year and a half after I left the United States Army and moved up here to Alaska in 2011 with five children, pregnant with number six. I then had two more children here in the state of Alaska. And, you know, we didn't have any problems. It was a great move for us initially. It was great all the way around. We were able to do homeschooling and do all kinds of things that, you know, it didn't offer in the lower 48. Due to some allegations that arose in late 2014, early 2015, I received a card on my door one night. And the following morning, I went and took the kids to the orthodontist. And after that appointment, walked into the OCS office in Wasilla, where I was questioned for about 15 minutes, and then subsequently four Wasilla police officers pulled up in front, and with nothing more than allegations, they intervened with custody, they called it, with my children. I was given this little booklet of your parents' rights, says you're supposed to be given a court date within 48 hours. I was not notified of any court hearing or allowed to attend any court hearing until March 22nd. Of 2015, and subsequently for the last almost 22 months now, any rights I've had as a citizen of this country have been trampled all over. Not only have my five children been placed in multiple placements, there's been a foster home that closed in the middle of the night for unknown reasons. There's been trips where my children have gone to safe house interviews for sexual molestation, but nobody from the department would like to explain what these issues are or why they were taken to these places. We got a new caseworker a couple months ago, and this gentleman decided to stop all of our visits. We were having in the community visits unsupervised, and the next step was supposed to be a trial home visit. But this particular caseworker has fabricated that I have an extensive criminal record, and so believes that I should not see my children, or that the visits should be turned into fully supervised visits in 1 or 2 hour increments only, which has been started just recently. There's been no meeting with this caseworker to explain himself. I've asked him to court view me to show me proof of this alleged criminal record he says that I have. Not one exists, nor does a call from that office explaining why they're doing any of the things they're doing. They've, you know, gone as far as to put a 5-year-old in a mental institution and put him on adult doses of Adderall. And I've called out to people all over this great country and done a little research myself. And I'm appalled at not only what's going on in this state, but what's going on in this, these child service organizations from coast to coast. How somebody like Nancy Schaefer could have something happen to her. How people who have lost these children, there's no accountability. We've had multiple caseworkers, multiple public defender attorneys, just multiple people on this case, dozens. And nobody can explain why these children aren't home. Nobody. I've reached out to Pastor Wiley Drake from the Baptist Church in Buena Park, California, and I intend to travel down there and appear on his TV show. And, you know, to think that our country had a million parent march and that everybody who watches TV didn't hear about it disgusts me. I spoke with Pastor Drake last week, and I told him that I believe that we're going to have to be prepared as parents to undergo as much persecution as Martin Luther King experienced during the Civil Rights Movement, and he agreed with me. And for this reason, this is more than just a parent issue. This goes beyond any kind of race, religion, any kind of demographic, and this becomes so criminal and so traumatic for everybody involved that at some point in time, somebody has to stop and listen. Somebody has to reach out, and thank you, Tammy, for being so brave to do that for the state. We need more people like you. Change is not going to happen unless we have brave representatives and politicians who are willing to go to Congress and take this to the only ears who can make a difference. And other than that, we rely on prayer and our faith, and OCS tells us to continually to do these parenting plans. Well, I've completed 2 parenting plans. I've completed 6 assessments. I've completed classes and classes and more classes. I've paid for my own hair follicle test. I've taken multiple drug analysis, whatever they've asked of me. It doesn't make any difference. My children are still held captive, still going through all types of different RAD, as it's referred to, reactive attachment disorder, side effects, as well as emotional distress, behavioral problems, you name it, it's going on, and I'm powerless to do anything about it. I don't know what else to say, but thank you.
Hello? Can you hear me? Hello?
Can you hear us now?
Yes.
Yeah, it helps if I turn my mic on. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, not a problem. First of all, I want to thank you, brave ladies, for bringing this forum. Not too long ago, one evening, when I was able to visit as a grandmother with my grandchild who had been in foster care, we were both bemoaning how hard it had been to go through this system. And we looked at each other, and I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said, "Then we have to speak up. We have to see what we can do to try to change this, because we're not the only ones hurting. I'm sure we're not in any cause." But again, thank you so much. My reason for calling in is not to go after OCS as an affiliation with Children's Services, but we need reform. We need reorganization. And reasons I feel that this is it needs to be reformed is this becomes a financial institution, and it hurts the parents. It hurts the parents for such a long time, even trying to recover. Their wages are garnished. They have to pay for services. They still have to try to get money to their children, all with no response. It hurts them, the children, and the parents, but it hurts the children physically and mentally, and they're deprived of their rights with their parents. There should be only a few reasons that OCS should take children from their home. One, physical abuse or mental abuse, or starvation due to neglect. No family is perfect. They all have issues. And the challenge of it, which bonds families together, is to work through those issues together. Excuse me, I'm reading kind of from a list, so I wouldn't forget what to say.
You're fine.
Okay, not only does this, like I said, hurt the parents, but I will go further with this. It hurts the whole family structure. It hurts the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, cousins. And for the future, why? Because there's no bonding. The children are taken away from these families, and they aren't bonding with their own family for their future. Next is court. I know all these things because I have been privy to watching it happen. You lose because it's state-run. I'm not sure this should be state-run. There has to be some other way that we can have arbitrators. We can have people that will take the time to listen to each and every case without it becoming a financial burden or just a yes or no, because the state has the power financially. It hurts the children in many cases because they end up seeing physicians that the counselors think they may need to see. The children are depressed. From there, they're sent to see a doctor who prescribes them pills. Living with a family, out of box, to family, to another family, is crippling. The crippling effect it has on the children will stay with them, just as the young woman just spoke of. It'll hurt them in their school. It'll hurt them in their relationships. It certainly isn't healthy. We do need this forum to rethink and restructure what's going on. And I just can't thank you enough for having this, and I hope everybody that's called in feels better just for someone that has listened to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. And next we have John.
Tammy.
Hi.
Appreciate you taking the time and listening to these horrific stories. I've got an OCS story myself, but I don't want to take anybody's time up with it. It was unlawful at best. They stole my child. They kidnapped my child for just under 30 days, from which I understand nowadays is unheard of. Nobody ever gets their kids back in less than 30 days. But the thing that this is the third time that I think we've attended, you know, your talks here, and work with me, I'm emotional.
You're absolutely fine.
I'm angry. The common denominator that I keep hearing in all of these stories over and over is we talk about this judicial system. As a legislator, I'm looking for some information. I'm looking for answers. When Mr. Murkowski was asked about, are you aware of the Alaska court system's crimes that they commit on people, And are you aware that the Alaska court system is not the judiciary? Mr. Murkowski's reply was, and it was just like that, a snap of a finger. His reply was, nobody ever said it was the judiciary, and that we have a system. And there's another term that I've heard repeatedly in your conversations here with these folks, this system. We have, and this is Mr. Murkowski again, we have a system and you either believe in it or you don't. I don't believe in this system. So I start doing homework here about 4 or 5 years ago. And not only is the Alaska court system, who's making all these rulings that affect all these family, all these children, all these people, not only are they not the judiciary, but they're a for-profit corporation as defined in Chapter 12 of our Alaska statutes. What's going on here, and why aren't we going right straight to the sources? Those are not judges. Those are attorneys practicing law from the bench and affecting people's lives in the manner that you've heard about here again this evening. Why is it that our legislators, our Congress, our senators, why is it that nobody is speaking the truth about this system that we are all expected to adhere to and abide by? I'm at a complete loss. It for folks that doubt me when I say that Mr. Murkowski actually said that, no, it's not the judiciary. We have a system, and you either believe in that system or you don't. Check out YouTube. Let's Ask Frank, too. Can you speak to that in any way? As far as how is it that we are allowing essentially a private person to judge and enforce rulings on these families?
Well, I had an experience this morning I'll share with you. So when I came in, I decided to spend the morning in the Anchorage court system to kind of compare it to what I see in Fairbanks, which is pretty much the only court system that I have seen. Because I realized not early on, I wouldn't say, that as I investigated the Office of Children's Services, that it's not an entity of its own. And there are checks and balances. The checks and balances just aren't happening. And what I experienced today, I went to several different courts, but my frustration of it is, and I'm sure the parents were more frustrated, and sadly enough, there was a lot of the cases, there were not any parents. Now, whether they got fed up with the system, and I don't know at how long any of these cases were, year-wise, but what I saw was several people trying to determine what was going to happen just among themselves, and then presenting it to a magistrate that came in. It wasn't a judge, it was a magistrate, particularly for today. And we don't do that in Fairbanks, good or bad. It just, goes beyond them. But just about every case I saw today was continued for a month or 2 months because, A, the right people weren't there. B, the people didn't get the paperwork done on time or didn't get it to the right people. None of what happened had anything to do with the parents or the parents' activity that went with it. So what that shows me is that you can't fix a system on just one group, because it is a system, an entire system, from whether you're talking about the guardian ad litem, the public defender, the assistant attorney general, who are the ones who are prosecuting this. And where do you go with the whole thing? I have legislation that I truly believe that would help. But at the end of the day, what I believe as a legislator for dealing with this for many years and not with my own children, through other people, is that the system has the power. And they dare any of us to change that system. And I truly believe, and I'm going to use I because it's for me, myself, as I've tried to bring my colleagues along with this last session, as I stood up on the floor day after day, story after story, to try to help those who have not had the experience of heard the stories hear how truly messed up the system is, and I don't care whether you're a foster parent or you're a parent or a relative, and God forbid a grandparent who, for whatever reason, may not ever see their grandchild again at no fault of their own. And I am at a loss at this point. The only solution I can come up with at this point is to better prepare those before a knock happens on their door of what they say. We teach our children that if they get pulled over by a police officer and get taken in, to say nothing. I mean, I do that. I'm pretty sure you probably did that. And I bet if I went on the corner and I asked that one question, I would bet that more than not, everybody has the same practice. But that doesn't happen here. It's very opposite. People feel that they have that conversation and tell them of the things that happened in the corrections that they have made, that everything will be okay. And what I have found is the very opposite happens. You have now pretty much shot down all your chance of getting your children back, because everything you have ever done will be used against you. Yet then I see on the flip side, parents that truly don't want to change, who have done very abusive things to their children, get their children back each and every time with little to no change. And all that comes when a system is not following its own rules. The ombudsman has written numerous accounts of things that need to be changed and documentation to go behind it. Yet little to no change happens. We hear more money needs to be poured into it. You can pour as much money into a system, and it's a bad system. It's not going to get better unless somebody truly wants to see it changed. And with that, we have more children in the foster care system than we have ever had before. And that's atrocious. And what I have heard from my own experience, from the people who have come to me, and the worst parts of it are those who were in the system themselves, who have ended up with their children now in the system and have truly done everything they thought they possibly should to care for those children. And maybe through a mistake or through a misrepresentation of somebody else seeing you. But I'll tell you right now, as long as our statutes, and that's where it is, makes it to where somebody can say something bad about you with no documentation, no backup whatsoever, and your children can be removed. And that's the way it is right now. That is all that it takes, because our threshold is one, if not the lowest, that there is. I wish I had the answer for you. I lose sleep on this over and over. I have walked parents through as much as I can, and I'm completely saddened by, I know parents have been retaliated on when they have called my office. But what are they supposed to do? And that's where I am. You know, and so I try to do it almost like the Underground Railroad was when, back in the Civil War days, where you try to give the help without saying who you are, and make sure they know the questions that they need to ask, and know that they need to take someone with them, and to tape every conversation that you have, not because it's a gotcha, right, but because so that you have evidence that this is what I said, this is what I was told, and I did what I was told, so somebody later can't come back and say you did it and then take another privilege away from you, like not seeing your children. We shouldn't have to do that, but I truly believe you do if you ever want to have a chance to have reunification on an even playing field. Probably not the answer you wanted, but I'm not going to shoot something up you and expect you to swallow it. There is an answer.
Short of
changing the system.
Right.
Truly a rival up from the grassroots to say that this is not acceptable.
How about just going back to law? Not statutes, not rules, not policies. How about what?
More statutes are our law at this point.
I'm sure that you've signed an oath to uphold and protect our constitutions.
Correct.
Well, let's just get back to our constitutions. Yep, one Supreme Court, one Superior Court, period, end of story. The other ones will, the legislator will put into place. But let's keep it legal. These guys are committing crime.
We have one Supreme Court and one Superior Court that happens up. We don't use magistrates up in Fairbanks. That's how it works up there.
Fairbanks is part of the Alaska court system.
It is.
It is not the judiciary.
But I think the point that I want to make with the whole thing is it still doesn't stop the lying. It still doesn't help the deception. And so could a check and balance happen in a better aspect because it goes? Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many parts of the system that could stop it from happening. But we have built a system on money to where every tentacle that goes out, whether you're talking about therapist, assessments, the court, the public defenders, private attorneys that get it. There are parts of businesses in this state that are completely dependent on money that comes out of the Office of Children's Services, you know, portion of it. And when that happens, people have a tendency, because they get blackballed, it is very hard, even though I know people want to do it, to step up. And some have, many have. And the sad thing is, there's the ones that we need within the system and have stopped doing the right thing and stop counseling, stop doing the assessments, stop being, you know, working for the Office of Children's Services, have left, you know, the system to go with it. And those are probably the people we need, you know, the both. But it will come down to a strong administration who wants to see the change. And if that doesn't, we can make little steps, which is better than nothing, but it's not acceptable in my opinion. And
about the kids in the meantime.
The kids, and now the kids who are the parents.
Right.
And the parents who are now the grandparents. And the cycle continues because the destruction that the state has said that we've done to save children have been a destruction of generations of children. But I am hoping that as we have, you know, and I know it's hard with people's work schedules to get put there, but that they're able to send testimony in as well, is as we tell the story, people can't keep hiding in the sand and say it doesn't happen. More people who come out and are brave enough to say something will also help others be brave enough to do it. And if I didn't truly believe that could help make the system change, I wouldn't do it. But it's hard. It's hard for parents to come out, hard for foster parents to come out, to be able to say those things. But if they don't, nothing ever will change. But it, one thing it won't do either is to, I think it does heal some, but that hurt will always be there. And then how do we make it so it doesn't? And most states that have been successful have started programs in which those who've been in the foster care system or have had their children taken away, as OCS has done, to come back and help navigate others through what they should and shouldn't do and have more successes and a lot less failures. But it's a big bus that doesn't want to move. And if it does, it's so shy, so little, that they still miss the curve as they went along the line to go with it. But I truly believe that these things do help. People have to keep hearing it from others to realize that it's happening in their backyard and it's not just happening in somebody else's neighborhood. But the bad thing is people usually don't realize that until they are the ones who've been trapped from within the system that they thought could never, that always happened to someone else or somebody else that they don't know. It's getting to a point to where, unfortunately, I think most Alaskans now know someone who has been put into the system, whether they should or shouldn't have been, but there shouldn't be that much damage going along, in my opinion.
Well, again, I thank you for your time and, you know, what you're doing here and little thoughts is really awesome. I know several people personally that, you know, have gotten caught up in the system. And, yeah, just having somebody just to talk to a lot of times is a lot of help. If we have an audience, not much, I would recommend to anybody and everybody that's listening to Ms. Wilson here, get smart about your constitution here in Alaska. Get smart about the U.S. Constitution. You know, what's going on all around you is It is crime. It is criminal. It is fraudulent. It is, there's a bunch of colorful words you could throw in there. But my point is get smart. Pay attention to what's going on right underneath your nose. Don't believe somebody just because they say you should believe me. Don't believe those OCS workers when they show up to your door with a, they don't have a warrant because it doesn't work like that. But my advice would be get smart. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Do we have anybody online that hasn't had an opportunity that would like to testify even if you didn't sign up? Okay, so we're getting... There's nobody else, right? So I'm just going to go ahead and end this, although I know it went to 6 o'clock and we may stay around just a little bit to make sure nobody else calls in late. But I just want to share the last few for anybody who might be online listening. And this is my advice from all the ones that I've heard. Someone knocks on your door, you call a friend, call your pastor, call your legislator, call someone, but have somebody else at the door to be able to witness whatever may or may not happen. It's in your best interest, no matter what. Realize that you can tape your conversations so you later can remember the things that you need to do. It's not a getcha for somebody saying the bad thing or the wrong thing. It's so that when you're in a traumatic situation, you're able to be able to come do that. Write everything down that happens. Everything. Send emails to reiterate what you think you heard so that you're following the directions that you need to do and having contact with your children that you have to do. Have a list on your refrigerator in case something does happen and your children removed, aunts, uncles, grandparents, those people that you know that are safe for your children to be able to go to. That is one of the number one issues is a lot of times it takes time to go find a relative. But remember, you are your best advocate. You are. And you can fight back, you know, by putting the truth that's out there. And if anybody else wants to say something else, go ahead. Come on, Rebecca. Did you? I can't hear you from back there.
I'd like to thank everyone so much for coming. And I will let anybody know that has attended if we decide to hold another meeting like this. Thank you so much.
And thank you for everybody who's come. We're going to go ahead and just leave the lines probably open for about another 10 minutes. If nobody calls in, then we'll end it at quarter till. But I really do appreciate it. I know people are busy all the time. I'm going to give you my number. My number is 590-7602. If you're listening and you just didn't want to call in, but you still want to be able to share your story, because that's where we start at, and then we start making the improvements. Thanks.
Do you care about our family? Well, that's, have you ever thought about being on the other side of the transition?
No, but I have had
a lot. Are you ready to chat about it? Because you're a bad mother, and you must have done something wrong. You must be a drug addict. You must be on welfare. I've walked signs, I've ticketed, really? That's your ass. I work hard.
I didn't think you're wrong. I didn't think it.
And I thought those people with everything I have.
Yeah.
And then I thought that I challenged you.
Someone else thought they were like, well, they're going to respond to them.
No, I'm going to go for it. No one will join you. They think we're crazy.
I'll do it.
Andy brought up a really good point earlier in that more and more victims and different families standing up and speaking up. It's a start. You got to have a starting point.
Exactly. And, you know, the starting point is, like, if OCS really gave a shit about family, family, French, I was a mom in early recovery. Do you know what OCS did for me? Disney. I was a mom that had been through horrific trauma that needed mental health. You know what they did for me? Physically. I needed parenting skills. You know what they did? Nothing. I had a lot of really, like, I wanted to be a good parent. I had no clue how. You know what they did? Absolutely nothing. So people can say whatever they want about me. I'll be real. I'll tell you what I did. Let me tell you what I also did. Yeah, I did drugs. Yeah, I drank. Yeah, I was not a good parent. I left my children with unborn people, and I did it for years. And you know what? That was the best I could do. And today, I do a whole lot better. I worked my butt off to get clean and sober. And it wasn't with the help of OCS. One had to open OCS case. And it wasn't with the help of anybody else. I did it on my own because that's what I wanted to do. And I did it the hard way, and I don't recommend it. But I walk people through it every single day. I walk people through this every single day. I walk with OCS families. I walk with addicts. I walk with alcoholics. I walk with people that need parenting skills. But I am the change that I want to see other people doing. And I present the change that I want to see people taking. Because people don't know what to do. They're afraid to ask. They don't know where to go. And then people judge them. Oh, you're just a dope thing. You know, dope fans want to be good people too. They're just hurting. We've lost our compassion. We've lost our humanity because we're greedy and we're selfish and we're self-centered and we're afraid. And that works for other people. That does not work for me. I love my neighbors, and I want us all to do better and to have better because we deserve better. And it is systems in place that keep us sick for the benefit purely of their own pocketbook. Purely. It is not because they care. It is not because they care. They do not care. If they did, they would work with families. They would have systems in place. If OCS really cared, they'd be out beating down the door just as much as heroin addicts will work. We need money because, you know, the Department of Corrections just spent down millions. Here, you want some grants for, you know, stimulators so you can outpatient detox off of heroin? Here's a grant. Here's a grant to start this. Here's a grant to pay your person that doesn't even have a degree, but they're starting a coalition. I mean, it's all about how you play the game. Nobody teaches you how to play the game. You have to figure out how to play the game so then you're in the game so you can change the game. That's why I'm here. But even though I got clean and sober and I did the right thing, and someone sexually abused my children, and I reported it immediately to other sports, they took my kids from me after they said, you have to let them see them. Really? And it was only because I had professionals that were with me every single step of the way that said, yeah, that's exactly what happened. They said, we're not willing to go to trial.
And with that and the passion, and so sorry that we didn't have more people who could do that. It is now 5:46, and we don't have anybody else on the line. But again, for those who are listening who didn't want to do it publicly, please feel free to email me. Again, remember, you are your best advocate. You're the one to be able to fight your battle. Please always have someone with you. Have a list on your right on your refrigerator so you know. If something happens and they take your children, again, another list of relatives, friends that would be able to watch your children while you start cycling through this to be able to do that. And if you have any questions, make sure you give me a call. Again, thank you for everybody who took time to testify or to listen. We greatly appreciate it. Have a good night.